March 22nd. For more information, go to cinemapolitica.org/film/Silvicola. We hope to see you there.
Cego.
Buju, Anin.
Danach A. Ak Anzenu Shukwithan.
Tanse.
Ay, Inuhatike.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Sego, Skanaga. Over the next six episodes, I'm going to introduce you to language speakers and language learners from Six Nations of the Grand River Territory. We will learn about what drives their passion to keep our languages alive and how they're doing it in different ways. We're going to hear music composed and sung in the language, and who knows, you may even pick up some words. But Words and Culture is more than just six episodes of the Haudenosaunee language family. Throughout the next several months, we're going to have other hosts introduce you to more Indigenous languages, including Inuktitut, Cree, Anishinaabemowin, and the Athabaskan language family. Joktagoyanyats, my name is January. January Rogers, and I'll be your host on this journey into the languages of the Haudenosaunee people. I am Mohawk in Tuscarora, and I live and work as a writer, a publisher, and a media producer from my home on Six Nations, or Oswego, as we call it. When I first opened the show, you heard me say Sego. That is a Gonyageha word for hello, but it's not spelled like it sounds. It's spelled SHE:KON. The letter K sounds like a G. The Mohawk language is called Gonyageha. And, yep, you guessed it, those G sounds are actually spelled with Ks. We have a local radio station on Six Nations called CKRZ-FM 100.3 Voice of the Grand, and they've been playing the same language segments for almost as long as they've been on the air.
We will now begin our lesson with transportation. Gagardenyas. Gagardenyas. There are four parts to this lesson.
It's a great way to hear and to practice the language when you're in your car, for example. And I remember when I was driving with my sister to Windsor from Six Nations and we had the language program on. We got to learn the Mohawk word for car, which is gazerek. Gazerek. We learned that word together. And the further we drove away from Six Nations, the weaker the radio signal got, and we started joking about how we were losing our language until the signal faded out completely. But we'll hear from language speakers who are dedicating themselves to not losing the language signal at all. My first guest is a very strong Indigenous language advocate, language educator, and cultural leader in Six Nations. Amos Key Jr. is Mohawk, but he is a Cayuga language speaker, and we'll find out why that is in his interview. Amos holds down many roles in our community, including being recently elected to band council. When I first approached Amos about doing this interview, a big smile came over him. I took that smile to mean the passion and joy he felt that our languages were getting some much-needed attention and that more people will soon learn how important our languages are to our overall well-being as Haudenosaunee people.
Hello, Skana. My name is Amos Key. Dehaihoasnik Gwaskiaso, and that's my traditional name. It translates as in Cayuga that I work with words. So that's the translation of Dehaihoas. And that was given to me at birth, so I had no control over it. It just so happened my career ended up being an advocate in languages for Six Nations, at Six Nations here at Grand River. I'm a Mohawk, Gayant Kyono, and I'm from the Turtle Clan. So from my mother, I inherited all of that ancestry from them, from my mother's side of the family, from Six Nations. We are a matrilineal system, so all of our inheritance, our ancestry, comes from our mother's bloodline. And that's probably because of the concepts that we have in our Genesis story about who we are as Ongwehome, Haudenosaunee people.
Does the Cayuga name come from your mother's side then?
Yes, my mother's side, it came from her father. They helped organize that name, and he brought it to her. And so it's from her family that it got the name, Dehaihoas.
And you're a Mohawk speaker?
No, I speak Cayuga. Mm. I'll have to tell you the story because my mother and father, my mother is a Mohawk speaker, fluently she was, and my father was Onondaga. But they knew each other's languages, and they also knew Seneca and all those languages that lived around them. So Seneca, Mohawk, Cayuga, and Onondaga. So I find it interesting. I never did sit down with them and ask them, because I was so young, I guess it didn't bother me, of why they raised us in a Cayuga language when it wasn't either of their languages. But because they were so fluent, quadrilingual plus English, it didn't matter to them, I guess. I don't think there was a conscious effort. The only thing I could maybe understand is the fact that Cayuga became the language of our spirituality here at Grand River. It's even in the numbers in the Longhouse, which is our the center of who we are for our spirituality. It's the actual physical buildings. The Longhouse people, Gunosiskehono. So that's the only reason I can think that they might have, for some reason, decided, or by providence or serendipitous, you know, said, we better raise them in the Cayuga language. So all of my brothers and sisters were raised in the Cayuga language. I understand more Onondaga and Seneca than I do Mohawk. But her family were all Mohawk speakers. I can remember them all speaking Mohawk when they got together as a family, her siblings, because there was like eight of them. And that Mohawk family all raised the language of their spouses. And so then at Six Nations, the language of spirituality became predominantly Cayuga. And that's the language that I grew up in, so that was really helpful, yeah, for me. So, yeah.
So your whole family is Longhouse people, and is that you went to Cayuga Longhouse?
Yes. At Six Nations, we have several Longhouses. I think there's four or five. There's a new Mohawk Longhouse, which is great. But predominantly, there were two Cayuga language. I guess all Longhouses were Cayuga language. As I said, it became the language predominantly in the Longhouse, in their spirituality. So there's the Onondaga Longhouse, even though it's Onondaga. It became a Cayuga-speaking Longhouse as well. There's the Seneca Longhouse, which you think would be Seneca, but it is Cayuga predominantly used in that Longhouse as well. And there's two other Cayuga Longhouses, Upper and then Lower Cayuga, with this Cayuga language anyway there. So I find that really interesting, that history, that rich history of our Longhouses, they became all predominantly Cayuga-speaking, mm-hmm. right, with the language and the spirituality and the ceremony and the music. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I look at my own history, I had Six Nations here. It was because there was a couple of solitudes here, I call it. There was a Christian and Longhouse solitude, and then the political Confederacy chiefs and the elected council. So those were the segments of our society here. So I found through my history, my learning here of Grand River, that the Mohawk-speaking community became Anglicans predominantly, and a lot of them, the language became not used anymore. So it became predominantly English for them. So, of course, because of the spirituality of the Anglican faith, right? And then the Longhouse people, they kept their languages. So that's what happened here. But in the last two decades, I would say, with the introduction of Ungwana Genjokwa with Brian Miracle's immersion program, they have moved to create their own new Longhouse, which will mirror all of the traditions anyway of all the Longhouses. And now they're doing it. They're conducting it in their own language, a Mohawk, which is beautiful. And that's what you want for them. You want them to have their own spirituality and so they can look at their own moral compass.
Mm. Amos, congratulations. You were elected to council.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And that was like really recently. Tell me what your role and responsibilities are in council.
Well, with the new elected council, right now we are going through 2 months of onboarding or training, which I find really helpful because I was in council before in the 80s, but we never had that kind of onboarding. But now, because I think there's so many directions we're going in and responsibilities, I'm grateful that they're actually having this training session for us before we take on more leadership positions. But we're going to be involved with everything from health to infrastructure to political stance externally, internally as well. And then we have committees that look after all of those. So then we'll probably be asked, each one of us, to chair one of those committees on behalf of the council. But I'm really, as you know, I'm a staunch supporter of our indigenous civilization here, and also our languages. So I'm sure I'm going to get those portfolios, and I'm really ready to start, because I'm really concerned that we still haven't funded the physical plant, a school for Gawaneo, the immersion school, even though it's been here for 35 years. It still doesn't have a healthy space for it to offer its kindergarten grade 12 program. We are grateful to Stires, Glenn Stires, for offering us his arena, but it's still not a school. So, I mean, we're grateful for all of his offering to allow us to have the Gawaneo immersion school there. We're very positive and grateful here at Six Nations, because we've gone to the point of establishing a language commission here that's going to oversee the development of language, long-range and short-term planning. But now we can now look at placing language, have a future, a sort of a blueprint of where we want, I guess, the next generation to be. Like, I think for me, and that's been always been my sort of in the back of my one of the metrics would be to have them, or all of us, our next generation, to become bilingual, you know, of whatever language, English and Mohawk, English, Cayuga, Onondaga, and English, vice versa. Mm-hmm. It's a good tool to have a language commission, because then you have all the people who are interested or offering language to come and sit at the table, and we can draft up a blueprint of where we want this community to go in the next 50 years.
Yeah. Right. Well, you're in a great position of influence to make that happen, I have a feeling that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yes. And my role at the radio station has always been to have language on the radio, so we're slowly moving there. I know we got some interest now from all of these community groups to maybe have a radio program about language or to in their language. And they can even be DJing in their language. You know, you don't have to have language lessons all the time. It can just be sort of the contemporary radio program with language as the mode of transmission.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's being done.
Yes.
We hear that coming out of Ganawage.
Yes.
They have that K100 3-point station or whatever it is. But they've got a noon hour all language programming.
Yeah.
You kind of answered this question already, but you wanted to hear more about people who are language speakers, where they have come through, it's intergenerational within the family.
Right.
And, I'm hearing from new language speakers that there is an old language, old school, if you will, language. And I'm wondering if you could tell me, because as someone who has been brought up in language with your family, what are the differences or similarities between old school language and what you hear the new language speakers speaking?
Sometimes when I hear them, I think it's the cadence of the language. And I'm guilty of it, too. I tend to speak it faster than my parents would have. Mm. They took their time speaking the language, so that was like, you can't misunderstand them, right? But I find also in my thinking, and maybe it's because I'm still translating as well from English to Cayuga, because that's what I'm always asked to do, right? But I just love hearing the young people now speaking in their circles totally in the language. And I don't know whether that's a criticism. I don't think it is. It's just that the language has switched, and the language has become, the cadence of it has sped up, right? That's the only real significant difference I see or hear, because I'm an advocate for language. I just love it when I hear them all speaking in a room, these young people, and they're bilingual, right? Mm. And I'm even as an adult, because I had no contemporaries to speak my language with, so there's about a 20-year space of these young people now who are bilingual. So that's what happened to us here at Six Nations. So all of our young people who are speaking a language are probably in their 30s. There's a big gap between speakers or bilingual speakers of the language. So it's either you're in your 70s or in your below age 30 or less, right, that are speaking the language. Those who are senior, they get together as well, and they help the younger people learn how to speak their language, or they're asked questions about certain, philosophies, even word origin etymology, they call it, some of the word phrases, like where did they originate from and stuff. And that's the next thing I want to work with is the etymology of our words, because a lot of it has a sacred morpheme in it that's related to our genesis or the creator. And I think we need to do some research in that. And that'll really bring the language alive, because then you'll know the origins of some of our more sacred phrases, I guess, of words.
I absolutely love that. You know, having an understanding of the real origins of these words and broken apart and connecting to the words in that way is just amazing. It's really indigenizing the methodology within the teaching of the language.
Yeah.
And, you know, because anybody can learn and recite, I suppose, you know.
By rote,
And, but then to, that really helps to root the language in one's heart, you will.
Yeah.
What are the benefits or, I don't know, that, like, say, for example, Mark Miller, MP Miller, white guy, who really is kind of proficient in the Mohawk language because he applied himself.
Yeah.
And what are the benefits of non-native people picking up the language, do you think?
Well, you could stand back and say they should have done it in the first place, right? And I think it'll give them an idea of who we are as Indigenous people, because there's this, all this incidental learning that goes on. So you learn, you know, you learn the grammar of the language normally in a language program, but I see a lot of our teachers, because they have this other knowledge base, that they come to the classroom and they can share the ideology, the psychology, the philosophy of who our what our civilizations are about, and their virtues and ethics. So they can share all of that in an adult classroom or an immersion system. You know, so they'll understand basically all that incidental learning that comes in a language program. And I think that's true for all language programs. It's just that now we're taking the stage. We're going to present now from our point of view and from our perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a little embarrassing for me as a non-speaker to when a non-native person can just kind of like, you know, kind of riff off in the language. I'm like, But, you know, I have nothing but excuses. I mean, even as a person who has like minimal language, when I do recognize words in conversation, when I hear the language spoken in conversation, and I'm able to pick out those words I know, it just makes you sit up.
Yes.
You know, and also, Amos, you're now the executive director at CKRZ, where we're recording our interview.
Yes.
I wanted to, if you could tell us about the role that you see radio playing in terms of perpetuating language, and in particular CKRZ. What does CKRZ do?
Throughout the day, we have language lessons, at least wordless, from all different languages, Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, Bemowin, Cayuga, Onondaga, and Mohawk. So we have that playing throughout the day. But now we're having actual students come in and now producing their own language program. So we started with Cayuga. We're hoping the Mohawk and then the Onondaga will come on, and then the Anishinaabe will come on and do their own show. But I think there's a connectedness between all of the Haudenosaunee communities, because as you mentioned, Gahnamwage, Agwesasne has a fantastic radio program in the language. And now Tainanega just got licensed. I got the license this week. They were certified to have a radio station there now. So they're going to start all over with their Mohawk language. And then now Manitoulin Island is also going to start with their radio station. So they'll have, it'll be all in Anishinaabe, Bemowin, Ojibwe. So that's going to be fantastic. So I think, I guess our next step would be to have an association of Indigenous radio so that we can talk shop and give our best practices and share our best practices with each other and raise the profile of our radio stations. Because we're a not-for-profit radio station here, I call it NGO, not non-government organization, we have that kind of connection to the community that they can come and use the radio station for their efforts, right? So I want to make sure that that continues to go on, and as a radio station here at CKRZ, that opportunity for our languages to flourish live on air. Because we always keep saying it's a live language.
Yeah.
It's something that we should be speaking. It's an oral language, I guess is what they say. Mm-hmm. So if it's, I think we have the vehicle for being an oral language right here at CKRZ. Yeah,
That's something that can get syndicated out into other communities. And, you know, it really kind of debunks the idea that any of the urban radio stations who have, like, you know, proper, you know, commercial radio licenses, who say, oh, the big excuse for them not to include language, although they're actually supposed to have the language, is the funding. Right. They can't find the funding to produce those language programs.
Right.
Whereas, you know, like you said, this is the people's radio station. It's the voice of the grant.
That's right.
So it's really literally bringing that home and making that available. Yeah. So that those programs then become like really invaluable to the radio community at large.
Right.
And I hope we see that.
Yeah, and we didn't, as adults, we didn't have that vehicle to help us with our language. But now this next generation, they have that vehicle for them to promote their language and to hear themselves speak, you know, because we rebroadcast a lot of the shows so that they can hear it over and over and over. And I think it's a great opportunity, I think, for all of our radio stations in the Southwest, or Southern Ontario, I should say, to really promote and help promote the language and to make it alive again, oral tradition, as we used to say. But we have a lot of that, and we want to be able to do that with our young people now that going forward. Mind you, we didn't have that available to us because, you know, our languages were, as a human right, were stripped. We were stripped of that with the Indian Act. I mean, right until the 80s when we started Gawaneo, the parents had to become civilly disobedient in order to have a school where the language was the mode of instruction. So I know that history, and I would advise any other community that if they want to demonstrate their need for the language, then become civilly disobedient. There's a place for being civilly disobedient, and we proved it here. The parents just said, we're not sending our children back to school until we get immersion, and that's what happened here at Grand River.
One last thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
You know, Amos, you're so active and busy in community, and you also sing with the singing society, Old Mush Singers. And I just wanted to hear from you the role you see the singing societies play in perpetuating the language as well.
Well, for our Old Mush Singers, I try to make sure that I compose songs in our languages so that these young people and these, you know, senior people who are in our group may not have had the opportunity to sing in their language. So, I try to create music in our languages so that they can learn them, right? And I guess because when you take a deeper dive into our civilization, it is full of music for every occasion, from birth, when you get your name, your language, I mean, your name is raised with music to the creator at that time in ceremony, right to when we take our last breaths. There's music for wakes. There's music for our deaths. So we have all those occasions. And when we celebrate, we can, you know, and all of our ceremony throughout the year, all is full of music. And that's, you know, it's just like any civilization in the world has music for every occasion, just like Western European languages all have music in their language. We do too. So that's why I'm so grateful. And when I'm at the university and acting as a professor, I try to debunk the term culture because it's so limiting. So I just say we have a civilization, you know, and one of the traits of that is that we have music, just like any other civilization in the world. And we don't just have stories about our origin, we have a genesis. We have a genesis, and we've got to start believing in that. And that's because when anthropologists talked about us, they used to say, it's their legend or their story. And it's so demeaning to me. It's not that. It is a genesis of who we are, because as Ongwehome people, we are from the sky world. And we consider ourselves star people because we came from the heavens, right? You know, so then you can say you're divine because then you know you came from a creator or maker who is Songwayadison to us. So we have that the divinity built in our civilization right away. We're probably closer to science with the Big Bang Theory. We call it Genesis. Scientists call it the Big Bang Theory. We all come from the sky world, you know. I just think that's so beautiful, and I think that's just now getting out there, you know, and I'm glad some of our younger artists are beginning to to promote that as well, whether it's in their visual arts or their music, that we are from the sky world and that we have a tradition, we have a genesis. It's not just a story.
How do you say star people in the language?
Oh, I would say Ongwehoe. I would just say Ongwehoe. Because we're the real people, right? Sure. The real people, yeah.
That was Amos Key Jr., Six Nations' own Renaissance man. I really loved how Amos talked about how music, as well as language, is such an integral part of what we do, how we live, who we are as Haudenosaunee people. Music is prayer. Music is medicine. That's why we have seen and continue to see great musical excellence come from Six Nations. As long as we keep singing, we will continue to thrive as ourselves. I'm January Rogers, your host. Coming up on future episodes of Words and Culture, I'm going to be speaking with language learners who created a radio show right here on Six Nations of the Grand River to share and teach their language. It's like a little language nest on the radio for all to benefit from. But now I have a song for you.
All Mush singers are part of a national singing society who are benevolent in nature. Their first job is to help people in community who need help. That used to be things like cutting wood for older people or delivering foods to those who are housebound. They are a well-structured and disciplined society with rules, traditions, leadership, and responsibilities. Singing is actually their third job. They appear at social dance gatherings and sing at different events in community and even at festivals. With these appearances, the old Mush singers are able to share not only our traditional songs, but the real meaning behind the songs. I had the privilege of attending one of their practices as they were getting ready for a big sing hosted on Six Nations in the spring of 2023.
Well, we are almost out of time, but I wanted to leave you with three quick words in Ganyageha. Honyo, meaning hurry up, honyo, come on. Whisk, that means five. That's my cat's name because I found him on Fifth Line here on Six Nations. And Oguare, meaning bear. My cat Whisk is a little Oguare, a little bear. Nyawa, that means thank you. So Nyawa for joining me on Words and Culture. Until next time. be well. Take care.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko Seni Denip E. Ninen Yuji Shina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
What up? This is Ludacris, and you're listening to CKUT.
Sego.
Buju Anim.
Danach A. Ak Anzenu Shukwithan.
Tonse.
Ay, Inuhadikai.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Sego, hello. Welcome to Words and Culture. I'm January Rogers, your host for this particular Indigenous language series celebrating Haudenosaunee languages. In our first episode, I explained that we are going to introduce you to some really cool and really interesting people who are actively reclaiming our languages. Languages that greatly suffered as part of the collateral damage perpetrated against all Indigenous cultures and people as a result of church and Canadian state colonial interference. We are actively recovering all that was taken from us, and our language speakers are at the forefront of that charge. Today, we hear from a group of Cayuga language learners and speakers who produce and host a radio show called We Are Talking on CKRZ-FM, right here on Six Nations of the Grand River. The radio show airs twice a month and is still a relatively new show to the CKRZ programming. The hosts get together to basically share and practice the Cayuga language on the air. So as a listener, it feels like we're being invited into a language nest of active learners. We get to hear the words spoken and used in conversation, which is a much different teaching method than seeing the language written on the page and not knowing how to say it.
And then also our review for our animal words.
Okay, I'll start that. Gunyate.
Turtle.
Naganyago.
Beaver.
Gode.
Eel.
Dewistawi.
Snipe.
Oswantgayo.
Hawk.
Skanyatdiga.
Heron.
Ben, did I pronounce that correctly?
Skanyatdiga.
Skanyatdiga. Otahioni.
Wolf.
Dewahondes.
Deer.
Nyangwe.
Bear.
And going back to eel, gonde.
Gonde.
We're going to hear these language learners introduce themselves in their language and talk about their language journey. Nyawagoa, thank you very much to Ben Hill, Liz Claus, Tammy Martin, Shar Hemlock Sky, and Shauna Claus for chatting with me at the CKRZ FM station after doing their radio show, We Are Talking.
Scanos Wagwego, Tammy Nate Gyaso, Martin de Gesenase, Otehioni ne Wagishaute, Gayakonon hewa Quenzo de. For me, Tammy, I'd like to say that I'm still a learner rather than a speaker. I guess I've been learning my whole life. There were times there where I wasn't learning, but it was still sticking in my brain, I guess. And my parents were both first language speakers. They both passed now, but they didn't speak a whole lot in the house to me because I was the youngest. And my dad was in residential school, so he didn't make an effort to teach me.
Skanos Wukwego, Liz Nagyaso, Claus de Gesenatze, Ganyata ni Wagishota, Gayokono ni Wakwenzoda. My name is Liz. I first started learning a language when I was in grade school. I learned it from grades 1 to 6 with Mr. Henry and Reg Henry and Mrs. Johnson. They taught us up until they'd come in once a week, and they would teach us pretty much the basic. And we learned that up to grade 6, and when we moved on to a new school, the language stopped. We didn't speak it much in the home. My father did speak some, but my grandparents, both sides, had been to residential school, so they didn't really teach their kids the language. So then that affected my generation, and then that affected my kids' generation. So it really affected a lot of people. You know, when you're a little kid, you're in school, and I didn't really focus on a language too much because of the fact that everything was spoken in English elsewhere and at home. And my attitude as a little kid was, why do I have to learn this that nobody else talks it, right? So that was kind of like my attitude about it because I didn't hear it anywhere else. So it wasn't until I got older that I realized that language is a part of me and I should know my language. I shouldn't be this old trying to go back to school and learn my language. This is something I should have been taught since I was little all the way up and that I could pass on to my kids. I went to Six Nations Polytechnic to the Ongwehonwe Bachelor of Arts program. That's where I decided to go learn my language. The reason I went there was because my son had went into the program before, and he needed help, and I couldn't help him. So that played a big toll on me. So I thought, well, I need to learn the language.
We say Scano, and we say Scano for hello, you know, but what does that mean? It means, like, wellness, and we're wishing wellness to one another. And when I think about wellness inside of me, that's like homeostasis. And the only way that I ever really came about that thought was because of the language, like thinking about coming back to my balance, my Scano. So I'm Char. My language learning journey started when I was little. So my mom is from Six Nations, but my dad is from Cattaraugus. So I was actually born in Buffalo. And when I was little, we spent some time in Okwesasne. And during that time, there were some things happening in Okwesasne, and my family was involved in just kind of protecting the land there in Okwe. And also, I was one of the first students in the Freedom School. I was the very first of the first year in the Freedom School. So my parents helped kind of get that going. And at the time, it was Tom Porter was there, and Lance and Barbara Hemlock. So that was kind of my first experience with language, and I don't remember a lot. I remember the feeling though, and how good things felt, and the things that happened around there, and just how that made me feel. That's what I remember, having good people around us. I do remember ceremonies. There was another school in Cattaraugus, and same concept, and so I also went there. So that was the same thing. I don't really remember, like, there was no structure, but I just remember the feeling that I had being around the language and being around people, people that were dedicated to our ways and dedicated to seeing our language and our ways keep going. So, yeah, I don't remember, like, exactly all the lessons or anything like that. I don't even know if there was any. I just remember how I felt. And that feeling stayed with me.
The Freedom School Char is talking about was founded in 1979 by Mohawk parents who wanted to preserve the Mohawk culture starting with their children. The Akwesasne Freedom School has led to an increase in Mohawk language speakers and the ongoing learning of intergenerational speakers. Our languages were almost completely lost due to cruel and damaging colonial attempts at assimilation through the forced removal of our children from their homes into residential schools, where our people were incarcerated for many years of their young lives. So there are generational gaps where our languages didn't get spoken at all. But language warriors like Liz, Char, Ben, and Shauna are working hard to reclaim and revitalize their language.
Scano Swagwego, Shauna Nikyaso, Claus Degesanatse, Ganyakde, Niwageshaute, Ganyakyono, Niwakwenzo de.
My name's Shauna. I grew up with nobody in my home or really within my immediate family speaking any sort of language. I learned it throughout elementary school. I think it was maybe like 25 to 30 minutes every couple of days, which was still very helpful and a very great thing to have down here in our schools. Yeah, so I had Nikki Sky. She taught me Kyuga language right from kindergarten to grade 8. And then I went to Gawanio for high school for one semester, so I had a little bit more exposure to language, which I'm grateful for. And then I really just couldn't settle on anything that I wanted to do. I went to school for a bunch of things, did some like film and television stuff. And then it really just continued to come back to language and come back to wanting to know who I was. So that's kind of how I got started here on this journey. And then I've just been going from there. I started last September with having like little to no language background or like little to no language at all. And then just slowly have been developing my language, still learning every day, still have like a million questions every single day. My maternal grandmother, before she passed, she also was in residential school at the Mush Hole, and she let me know, this was maybe a few days before she had passed, because I was sharing my language journey with her a little bit, and she was always excited to hear. And then she let me know like a few days before she passed that she's like, well, I would have known more because her grandfather, which I didn't know this, she said that he could speak both Kyuga and Mohawk. And then that's just something that she didn't mention to any of us until it was like she knew her time was like coming. And so, yeah, that's just like something that I really held close with me. And I think that's really what has got me through this last year and to keep pushing, was just knowing those things. And I want to continue that. Like, I want to have language for my children and just bring back all of that knowledge to my family, because we don't have that in my family right now. I'm really like the first one who's kind of stepped out and been like, let's bring this back.
So this week's words, we're going to keep with the theme of liking, and we're going to go right into she likes somebody. So myself and Shauna will run through these words with you. The first one is a son waits.
She likes you.
Okno waits.
She likes me.
Undan waits.
She likes her.
And Hoan waits.
She likes him.
So Hoan waits can mean she likes him, and also
he likes him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Hoan waits has a double meaning. She likes him and he likes him.
How about we go over them one more time, our new words?
Yeah, do we each want to take a turn, maybe pronouncing them?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay, sounds great.
A son waits. She likes you.
Okno waits. She likes me.
Undan waits. She likes her. Undan waits.
And one waits. She likes him and he likes him.
Each language learner and speaker knows who first taught them the language, and they honor them. No matter what level of connection we have with our indigenous communities, if we look and listen closely enough, the language is there. I remember attending a recital of The Great Law by Chief Jacob Thomas. It's one of our cultural lectures, you could say, and there was lots of language peppered throughout that recital. So even if you're not a language speaker yet, there's still value in hearing the language spoken. And when you get to hear the language spoken often enough, there's a good chance of being able to pick it up, like a song that gets repeated on the radio. That's why sharing Indigenous languages on the radio seems to be such a good fit.
Skano Swagwego, Ben Gyaso, Kyonye Kyono, Niwa Kwenzo De. This is Ben here. For language learning, hearing other people reminded me, I did hear it, not in the home, but in daycare. I forgot about that till just now, here at Six Nations Daycare. I grew up off reserve in Brantford, but I was in daycare here when, you know, before going into elementary school, and Marge Henry would have been the first one speaking there. And I remember La Tiki was a cook too. Actually, I don't remember. I remember my mom telling me that. I wouldn't have remembered that from way back when. But so that's my first exposure to language. I didn't hear it in my household, but when I go to visit my dad here on Six Nations, he would say the odd word, and if I go visit my grandma, she would speak it, but with somebody on the phone, I never knew who. Like, she was fluent. That was pretty neat. But unfortunately, I didn't learn it till later on. High school, they offered Mohawk. It just started, I think, when I was in grade 11 or something. So I took a couple years of Mohawk, and I really liked it. I found it really important. It gave me a sense of identity. And then years later, I ended up changing over to studying Cayuga. Took some night courses here and there. I remember I was in one with Tammy, actually, at Polytech in the evening. Just one night a week, maybe an hour or two, 10 weeks or something like that. But it wasn't until later on I went to Duare Wayesta Gayakono. That's the program we're all in. I'm an instructor there now, but I went through the program for a couple years and was very fortunate to work with some fluent speakers and try and learn as much as I can. But yeah, I'm still learning. I still have a lot to learn, but I enjoy it. It's incredible. It's so much more descriptive than English, the Cayuga language.
We hear from Char.
I was really close to my grandma, and I would come visit her on my own. And one time I was 15 years old, I came back on my own to visit, and my grandma was talking with her cousin, and we were at her house, and she was talking English, and I could see she kind of got scolded a little bit, and then she started talking Cayuga, and I didn't know that she could do that. I didn't know that she was able to speak. So that to me is like my moment where I knew that is something that I wanted in my life. After that, I did ask my grandma, you know, little words here and there about what to say, but it wasn't really, I hadn't moved back yet. So when I did move back, I've been home 18 years now. That was the first thing that I did was try and take a class. So I did take a class at Polytech with Tom Deere. And it was just in the evening, same as Ben and Tammy, just evening classes. But I wanted to move back because I wanted my children to be raised in the Longhouse, and I wanted them to have their language. So my older kids went through IELTS Thomas, the immersion school at the Cayuga Language Immersion Program at IELTS Thomas. And currently my younger ones are at Gawinio in the immersion program.
Haudenosaunee encompasses six nations, each with their own language. There are some similarities and some differences each of these languages have in relationship to each other. There is Mohawk and Cayuga, which are the focus languages in this series, but there is also Oneida, Onondaga, Seneca, and Tuscarora languages. CKRZ FM, the radio station here in Oswegan, which is the main village in Six Nations, has been airing the same language lessons for years. You can tune in every lunch hour throughout the work week and hear a short language lesson in Mohawk or Cayuga, or even Anishinaabe. Let's take a listen.
Welcome to our Mohawk language class here at CKRZ. This lesson is intended to help people learn common phrases in the Mohawk language. There are dialect differences in the Mohawk language, and those differences may vary from family to family and from Mohawk community to Mohawk community, and this lesson represents one of those dialects. We will now begin our lesson with transportation. Gagardenyas. Gagardenyas. There are four parts to this lesson, and this is part one out of four. Bus. Yagoya dagardenyas. Yagoya dagardenyas. Airplane. Degadas. Degadas. Baby carriage. Stroller. Owira'a agozerek. Owira'a agozerek. bicycle. Degeni deyoga guan dunde. Degeni deyoga guan dunde. Boat. Gahueya. Gahueya. Roller skates. Yoga guan daniunde adojina. Yoga guan daniunde adojina. Skates. Adojina. Adojina. Canoe. Onaget. Onaget. Car. Gazerek. Gazerek. Bus. Yagoya Dagarenyes. Airplane. Degadas. Baby carriage. Stroller. Obira'a agozerek. Bicycle. Degeni deogahguandunde. Boat. Gahunweya. Roller skates. Yoga guandaniunde adojina. Skates. Adojina. Canoe. Onaget. Car. Gazerek. That concludes our Mohawk language lesson. This lesson is intended to help people
I am curious about how technology is influencing the learning of our languages. And while we do use radio to transmit the language and language lessons, like the one we just heard, I'm really starting to think about the use of AI, artificial intelligence, and the connection between that and language. We hear from Ben Hill on this.
I always feel like technology is a double-edged sword, because it can help. Like with me, the way I learn is really visual, and if I just had to hear it, it would take me forever to pick it up. But because I can read it, I've always been strong at reading and writing. In English, it took a long time to get comfortable with writing in Cayuga, and I'm still working on it. I still make mistakes now, but that visual, seeing it written somewhere or in materials, I know it helps me. I know it can help others. I know creating resources like videos or audio is always helpful, because we need to be speaking properly, so we have to hear it properly. We have to tune our ears to it, and then that takes time, or at least it took me a bit of time to get my ear tuned to the sound of it. But I say it's a double-edged sword because I know, I don't know, I've always been raised to be cautious with it and protective of it. And I don't know, we know that historically things of ours have been taken, our culture even, and monetized and made money off it. And that's not why I learn it. I learn it because I want to know how to speak and be part of keeping it going. So that's the double-edged sword. You could create all kinds of things, even programs, but I don't know. I feel like it can come back to bite us if the wrong person has the wrong intentions with it.
There is something to be said about making something so precious and so important to our identities overly available. If history has taught us anything in regards to what we make available to non-native populations, it's that a healthy dose of caution should be considered. We're going to hear more from our language learners, but now I want to play a song for you. This is End of Summer by an up-and-coming Mohawk singer-songwriter, C.J. Montour.
Where you gone? Where you gone? Where you gone? come to bed, but you were already out the door. I was just trying to get you to come to bed, but you were already out the door.
End of Summer by one of Six Nations' youngest singer-songwriters, C.J. Montour, who said he wrote that song in 45 minutes in his father's garage. What a talent. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from him. I asked the We Are Talking Cayuga Language show group what the most important part of learning the language is to them. This is Char.
Learning our language, for me, is the most important thing that I can do for my family, besides loving my family. Learning my language and connecting myself back to our ways. I always tell people that because our land base is becoming so small and it's painful to see sometimes, but I'm like, you know what? As long as we have our language and we have our ways and we know who we are, we're always going to exist. And yes, this is our land and it's getting smaller around us, but it doesn't matter where we are. If we have that, you know, we know who we are, and we're never gonna stop being that. So we're not just learning language to be just to talk to each other in Cayuga. It's not a fad. This is something that I feel like changes you inherently inside. It changes the way you think and the way that you connect to each other. And I feel like you can't really explain that and put that into words unless you're going through that process of learning the language.
Remember Liz from the top of this episode on words and culture? This is what she has to say about her hopes for the future of her language.
When I think of our community without language, it makes me sad. It really hurts my heart because our language is part of who we are. And without that, we're just like regular people. So we're all trying really hard to keep the language going. Spreading it to generation after generation, even trying to create new first language learners. That's a big step because English has played such a big part in our lives now that it's hard to omit it altogether. But what I see for the future for other people learning the language, more speakers being created, I think that makes me happy. And I can't wait to see the day that you can just go anywhere in a store, the bank, wherever, and you'll be able to speak your language and someone can answer you back and carry a conversation on.
Just imagine being able to carry on whole conversations in Cayuga or Mohawk or whatever your indigenous language is here on Turtle Island. You could just go into the store and ask them for the Three Sisters. Otsaheda, beans. Oneste, corn. Ona unsara, squash. Next time on Words and Culture, I will speak with Language Resource Materials creator, Christy Talbot, who takes simple children's songs and translates them into the Mohawk language. I'll also be in conversation with other language learners and language teachers from the Mohawk and Cayuga language groups in particular. Nyawa for listening. I'm your host, January Rogers. Please tune in to the next episode of Words and Culture.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko Seni Denip E. Ninen Yuji Hina.
Echo say.
Kakuhut Dao. We'll see you again.
All right.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button.
Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Black Theater Workshop presents Every Day She Rose by Andrea Scott and Nick Green. After the Black Lives Matter protest at the 2016 Toronto Pride Parade, two friends find their racial and queer politics aren't as aligned as they thought. Don't miss the Montreal premiere of Every Day She Rose at Théâtre Espace Libre from April 3rd to the 14th. Visit blacktheaterworkshop.ca to book your tickets today. This is a Black Theater Workshop production and CKUT co-presentation.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yeah, yeah.